Welcome to the Angaza Forum podcast, where we engage in dynamic conversations with industry leaders and trailblazers on the profound impact of the financial services sector in driving sustainable development and creating an equitable society. In this podcast series, we shine a spotlight on the vital role of women in the financial sector and their contributions to shaping a more inclusive and progressive financial sector. This podcast series complements our in-person convenings, which take place across Africa. Our next event will be held in Nairobi, Kenya this October 16th and 17th. To register, visit our website at angazaforums.com.
My name is Patricia Kamau, and the topic for today is women in leadership, and we're so happy to be joined by Joanne Paul, Senior Advisor at Kearney Africa. Joanne joined Kearney in March of 2022. Previously, she served as a group CFO for a technology company and a prominent legal firm. She also served as CFO at both an investment holding company and a large retail bank. Additionally, she was head of finance for a major financial institution in the Africa and Middle East division. With over 20 years of experience, Joanne has also held various directorship and consulting roles, including chairperson of a philanthropic organization and non-executive director of a multinational bank. Welcome, Joanne. We're so happy to have you join us today.
Thank you, Patricia. It's an absolute privilege and a pleasure to be here on my side.
So let's get started. You have held several leadership positions, including chief financial officer at several financial institutions and separately as non-executive director of a bank. What are some of the lessons on effective leadership that you've learned along the way?
Thank you, Patricia. I think I probably can sum it up in what I would call four C's to be deliberate in terms of experience. One, being change agile, so change agility. It's definitely been the only constant in life, the fact that nothing remains as is. And so those that can adapt quickly to change, be more effective in new circumstances, can actually thrive. And so from my perspective, the finance role specifically sit at the heart of the business. So you collect dots, you connect dots, and the change agility there is the ability to not only tolerate change, but then to embrace the opportunity for growth. And that's where connecting those dots is key. So it includes a level of flexibility, being open-minded and willing to step out of my comfort zone has been quite important. And as a consequence, that comes with solution being solution-orientated and being able to adjust and shift priorities. So that's the first thing. The second thing was about empathetic curiosity in terms of lessons learned. Is that empathy combined with curiosity is a powerful duo. It promotes an understanding and a level of connection, and specifically the capacity to actively listen to others. So that's listening to understand, to consider their perspectives with genuine care about their experience and their feelings. And as a leader, I find that is where the magic happens, because people are willing to give you their ideas, but also willing to escalate risks early on. And so the ability to ask questions, seeking to understand different points of view and approaching situations with a much more open heart and open mind has helped me from a leadership perspective in terms of solving for challenging problems, identifying new opportunities, etc. But it's an attribute that really has enhanced my personal relationships. And across the African continent and in all of my roles, the relationships have been absolutely tangible. They're still key in my world. And I think this empathetic curiosity and empathy as a learned skill has been really important in getting there from a leadership perspective. The next one is the creative compliance side. Compliance refers to adhering to rules, regulations, establishing norms. I'm a big believer that risk, much like brakes on your car, allows you, if you've got the compliance right and the framework right, to actually go faster. There is safety net. There are the guardrails around what we do. And creative compliance takes this concept just one step further. It encourages individuals to find innovative ways to meet the requirements of doing their day job. And specifically, having grown up in financial services in my space and in the finance world, and now more deliberately consulting with financial services, it involves the opportunity to think out of the box with creative solutions, but within the right boundaries and established guidelines. And that's really been important from my career perspective as a leader, because it demonstrates commitment to being ethical, but also imaginative problem solving. And so creative compliance in my world is about following the rules, but driving positive change within that framework. And the fourth C that has been key to the roles I've chosen is courage, is the ability not only to face fear and uncertainty and adversity with a level of confidence and determination, but also the willingness to be vulnerable, to fail forward, to acknowledge progress over perfection has been really important in my career as a leader. So it's involved taking risks when you're courageous, standing up what I believed in, and persevering in the face of challenges. And in my career, I have left roles for that very reason, in terms of doing what is right and essentially right. I have moved towards roles and organizations, choosing very deliberately who I work for, what I do, and my why. And I've had to be quite forgiving of myself so that I'm not deterred by setbacks or failures, but rather views these experiences as opportunities to learn and grow. And so for me, vulnerability and courage go together, and they've empowered me to take bold actions, navigate difficult situations, and pursue my goals with resilience and real conviction. So those four C's, I think, from a leadership perspective: change agility, empathetic curiosity, creative compliance, and courage have been instrumental in terms of shaping my career as an effective leader.
Looking through all the leadership roles that you've held, you've made it look easy to be a leader. Would you say that that is the case?
Definitely not, Patricia. I don't think it's easy to be a leader. I think life in general is filled with ups and downs. And even as a leader, the journey has triumphs and trials. And so often it appears effortless on the outside, but in reality, it can be quite different. The one thing I've learned is we probably don't share enough stories about our career scars. And so people think sometimes it's unattainable or it's so easy for you, I'm not sure I can get there. And I think if we shared our stories more, people will realize that actually we've all had to take two steps forward. Sometimes we're knocked down and have to get up, dust ourselves off and keep going. And so sharing the stories of maybe situations we've navigated actually help inspire individuals to keep going. So no, not effortless. Yes, very deliberate. And I'll give you an example. A few years ago, I was navigating a merger. I was leading the finance team, and it was between two different financial institutions. The stakes were high. The stakes to succeed, the stakes to realize post-value or post-acquisition value creation. Also to ensure we retained our talent and maintained a motivated workforce, because emotions ran high among employees. There were questions about job security, changes to their roles, and even the best individuals having to navigate uncertainty sometimes find it difficult. And so there were three challenges that are still top of mind now. One, resistance to change. So there's a big distinction between people's ability to change and willingness to change, and how much change they can actually absorb. And so many employees were resistant initially to this merger, fearing for their roles, not sure given the uncertainty, aware of the disruptions to their job. And this is where understanding their change fitness or change agility was quite key. Then there was the cultural integration, merging two distinct organizations and blending different cultures, processes, systems. So that talks to not only how you operate in the operating model, but then what you do on the ground. And so that cultural integration, which is really key, because culture helped people shift from just surviving to actually thriving. That was important, because two completely diverse cultures. And then the last one that touches on both the resistance to change and cultural integration is the level of uncertainty. When the future is still being mapped out, teams needed to find their new normal, find their level of stability to continue to perform. And so in being a leader and asking whether or not it's effortless, I was feeling those things too. And that's really important to acknowledge, is that you as a leader go through this as well. And so a couple of things that I worked on in that space. One, open communication. So we had one-on-one discussions, regular updates. We were transparent. We acknowledged what we did know, didn't know, and acknowledged everyone's fears and aimed to address concerns as far as possible. Very conscious of the business case, so we understood why this made sense on paper, but making it embodying that for the people was key. And we also held town halls. So the one thing there is communicate. So the people fill the space with assumptions. The other one in that communication was earlier comment on empathetic curiosity is empathy and listening are combined. So to actively listen to employees' worries, to not discount them, but to try and understand their perspectives, to tailor the approach on how we reassured good people. And that was quite important. And that included myself when I wasn't sure, finding the right individuals that I could lean into, confide in, and then get advice from was key. And then working towards building trust. So building trust across teams. And there we had joint organizational workshops, we had team building activities, we did cross-functional projects, but we also celebrated the small wins. I think often in business, we try, you know, journey towards this big milestone, but I love Simon Sinek's view is that life is not a finite game. There's not a start and a finish and a winner is a loser and a set of rules. This merger articulated why it's an infinite game. The rules change, the players change, the people change. And as a consequence, those that can keep playing are the most successful. And as such, building that level of trust that allowed people to continue to learn was important. And then trying to lead by example. So a positive attitude, particularly when we were faced with setbacks, because unexpected challenges happened, whether it was an IT integration issue, whether it was a process or system or something even like the delegation of authority, being adaptable, adjusting timelines, seeking expert advice, keeping the end goal in mind was key, but then also being resilient in terms of inspiration and staying committed or staying true to the course. So ultimately, the merger was successful, but it did not come without pain and it did not come without effort. And as a consequence, leadership is definitely not about perfection. It's about learning, adapting, inspiring others. And for me, probably one of the greatest lessons I learned there, it's about progress over perfection and recognizing progress all the time. So certainly not effortless, but definitely the effort is worthwhile on reflection.
Right. And you've mentioned learning as one of the keys for good leadership. And how would you say that you build your knowledge to be effective in your roles over the years?
I think fortunately, I joined a career that required continuous professional learning. So as a consequence, the technical element was always something I was inherently excited to do, required to do, and actually a little bit of a nerd, to be frank. I really enjoy the opportunity to do reading and research around my day job, so to speak, and around the ecosystem that I operate within. And so I've actively had to seek out literature, industry reports, thought leadership articles, and stay informed about the trends, about best practices, so that I can be in my job and not just articulate how our business is doing against our own, you know, milestones, targets, KPIs, but actually how are we doing in the broader environment? Do we understand the full value chain? Where disruption happens earlier in the value chain that'll impact us, what does that mean? And so as a consequence, I think my career required me to be up to date. My curiosity inspired that, and I thoroughly enjoy learning. And every day, I think for me, a successful day is where I've learned something different or something new. I work with an amazing young woman that said, I want to make sure my brain hurts some days. So the reading and the research is key. Networking and conferences, and like the Angaza Forum is another one, in terms of the workshops, the events, learning from peers and the exchange of ideas and the exchange of experiences is invaluable. So that's been key. And I find their interactions there provided fresh perspective, fresh insights, and now they're a go-to network for other questions I may have. And that speaks to a number of the options and conferences I've attended. And then mentoring and coaching. I've been quite deliberate about taking some time out to reflect on where my strengths lie, the areas for development, where it is I really need support because it's a blind spot, potentially, and that often requires someone else holding up the mirror. And so engaging mentors and coaches has helped me gain far more personalized guidance. Their wisdom, their feedback has shaped some of my decision-making. And I've always said to individuals, if as early on in your career as possible, you can find the people around you that are almost the board for Joe Incorporated, you yourself and I that you can lean into, they are invaluable in your growth journey. And then online courses, online webinars, you've got amazing access to information these days, various platforms, etc., that allow us to be stretched and to think differently. And so there are also flexible learning opportunities. I've had to maneuver my learning around my family dynamics, around my role, etc. So I think very fortunate that we have that. And then in my career journey, from a learning perspective, I actually segued into HR for a while and worked with the learning and development team. I actually worked in the HR function itself completely. I then moved into consulting services, out of finance, etc., so into the front line. And I think that exposure, where I've pushed myself past my comfort zone, out of the role that I necessarily studied for, worked in, has been key to building on the different, you know, elements and areas of expertise that I have, built on my understanding of a broader role. So the value we add as a business partnering function or in finance to the front line of the business, the human capital element, and my time in HR literally has been life-changing for me in terms of how I show up as a person and as a leader. And it's challenged and broadened my knowledge base. And I think at any given time during a career, I've definitely suffered imposter syndrome. And I've had to consider two things. Is it because the actual organization has made me feel that I'm not the right person in the right role? Or is it because I'm learning and I'm trying to find my place where I can make a contribution that's meaningful? And when you reflect on those pieces, continuous learning is a lifelong journey. We are never going to know all the answers. And I think if we're willing to accept what we don't know, ask for help, and then actively pursue knowledge, I think it's a remarkable place to be. And for successful leaders, that learning journey is never finished. And if we're always willing to learn and willing to grow and promote that, we'll enrich ourselves, enrich our relationships, and contribute to success beyond just our work environment.
In the 20 plus years of your career, you've experienced a lot of changes through the various roles that you've held. How has it been being a woman in the financial sector? And would you say things are getting better for women?
So my journey, sure, it spans, like you said, actually almost a quarter century now, a bit longer probably, and very diverse, from investment banking to professional services to technology companies to building businesses in new geographies, to turning around businesses here. And I think as a woman, it faces a unique set of dynamics in that space. One, that for me, my role spoke to my purpose. So conscious capitalism was important. So my role at UBank, previously Teba Bank, I lived that ethos. And so I was deliberately in a role that enabled socially responsible and ethical business operations in banking. It was transformative, it uplifted families in a community, and for me that was key in terms of why I wanted to take my skills and make an impact in my community as one example. Gender investing gap is a key piece for me as well, and so we face barriers as women in terms of wealth creation, and the gender pay gap sits in that space. And so although we excel in the short-term financial planning, longer-term financial planning investing remains a challenge. So I do a lot of coaching in that space and asset planning for individuals outside of my day job, but that's definitely informed why financial services, in terms of empowering women financially too. I think in terms of things changing for women and unlocking potential, encouraging our involvement in financial markets, and that's part of why the Gaza Forum is actually close to my heart, is if we invested at the same rate as women and we actually unlocked our potential at the same rate as women as men do, there's $3.22 trillion of additional global investment capital that can actually be unlocked. Women investors also outperform men and prioritize, as I mentioned earlier, from a social perspective in my space, but broader ESG factors too. So yes, I think things are changing for women if we work as a collective to unlock it. Also, representation matters. Globally, women hold 21% of board seats, 19% of C-suite roles, in financial institutions as an example, and there's increasing leadership representation at senior levels across multiple organizations. I'm involved at the moment in a gender mainstreaming awards program here as well, where we're looking at the role of women as positive role models, inclusive leaders, fearless thinkers, and then in the organizations, what that means in terms of delivering real change. And that's commercial business change, as well as change to the structure that has impact on their clients, their people, and their communities. So women advocating for women, men advocating for women, and as a collective gender intelligence, I think, yes, there is definitely an easier platform for us to move from, but we're not there yet. I don't think we've arrived, so to speak, and I think there's more work to do. And the revenue opportunity I mentioned earlier, unlocking the investment piece, but financial institutions could probably unlock nearly $700 billion better if they serve women from an investment perspective. And women, I think we need to recognize not only the power we have to reshape financial markets that is essential for societal progress and for economic empowerment, but also the responsibility we have to make that happen. And so from my perspective, I think things have changed for women. I think there is an opportunity for us to use what has changed as a platform, those that have gone before us as trailblazers, to continue to be the difference that we want to see in the world. And I think by nature, we are ethical by design. We're also collaborative by design. And so we can co-create what this future can look like. It is fundamentally different. When I worked in the Middle East in 2003, the role that I played, the inherent requirements as a woman to, you know, take one step back, how you see and how you operate in society and even in the meeting room and boardroom is very different to what we see now. We have earned our seat at the table. We have a voice, and how we make it land, I think, is crucial and sits very much in terms of how we show up as leaders and how we give our fellow women a hand up, and importantly, how we work closely with our men. We have been very deliberate around teaching our girls to be brave, to take the opportunities. With my own children, I have three boys and a daughter, being deliberate about my boys and how they actually work with women and create that space and understand their role in terms of empowerment and diversity, inclusion, and a real sense of belonging. So teaching them to deal, so to speak, and to embrace brave women too. So I think as a collective, we're in a much better space than we used to be, Patricia, but we've got quite a journey still to go.
Right. And as we embark on that journey to have more inclusivity in the financial sector, what advice would you give to young women who are just entering the sector now?
Your goals must be big enough to scare you. And I say that because sometimes we choose the easier route. Don't do that. I think be confident in your abilities. Believe in your abilities. On my daughter's bedroom wall, I've got a sign that says, Michaela believed she could, and so she did. And so I think that's important, is you deserve a seat at the table. Embrace the challenges. Learn from setbacks. They're a stepping stone for growth. So confidence is key. And if we can help other women find their confidence, that's important. Network. You're as good as your network's network. So connect with your mentors, connect with peers, connect with industry professionals. I have never been in a situation where someone asked me to form part of their network or for advice where I've said no. I've also never asked someone and been declined. They've asked me why, how they can help, what I was looking for. So they're quite deliberate about the guidance and the role they could play and helping me navigate the spaces. But really, start your network now. I think it begins as early at school, all the way through to your tertiary education and into your first working environment. Your peers, when you first start work, will alongside you be the CEOs, the CFOs, the directors, etc., of the future. And they're not only market makers, but market shapers. So make time to network. We spoke about learning earlier. Stay curious. The financial landscape evolves rapidly. Our economic factors evolve rapidly. We've got the greatest demographic dividend in the world, and this continuous learning will help us change and shape what that could look like. So I always talk about the mantra that says, you must be willing to learn, unlearn, and relearn. And so that's really important. And I think maybe there it's about seeking knowledge relentlessly and embrace technology. It's not a technology or human space, it's rather an and. They're absolutely intertwined, whether it's digital trends, data analytics, fintechs, AI, but there's a distinct difference between what AI can generate and then the human element that really takes it to the next level. So embrace the opportunity that technology gives you to really be more solution orientated, more creative, able to explore the cone of possibility, because the basics can get done more quickly if we use tech. And then advocate for yourself. This is probably the hardest one, is not to shy away from negotiating your salary, your promotion, your opportunities. Your value matters. And I think sometimes we believe that people will see our work, our good work will speak and will do well. I had a very interesting session with a wonderful woman, Nivin Posma, that said, work doesn't speak, people speak. And so as a consequence, the question I have for young women going out there is, who advocates for you? You must advocate for yourself. Find a mentor who behind closed doors will help you unlock your potential and be the best you can be. And also hold up the mirror for those moments where you're not being true to some of your journey. But a sponsor is different. They advocate for you in public. They put their hand up when your head is down. And so actively find sponsors, I think, is really important in that space. And so overall, resilience and adaptability are also your allies. You can forge a path forward if you're willing to do that. And be clear then in those spaces about your goals and about your aspirations. What do you want to achieve? I worked with the most remarkable man once that said, what's on the slip in your pocket? I said, what do you mean? He said, if you go in to a store and you wanted to buy a leather chair for your desk and you come out with a purple futon because you were strategically seduced by the salesman, you need to go back to that piece of paper around your goals and your aspirations, be clear about your decisions and your actions so that you're not dissuaded, because it will happen. The strategic seduction is real. And then embrace collaboration. And that comes back to the piece around having others advocate for you in terms of mentors, in terms of sponsors, and in terms of your network. And the last one there is compassion. Remember that we are human first. And so emphasize that with your colleagues, your clients, your stakeholders, your peers, the people you work with. Compassion fosters trust, meaningful relationships, and kindness. And kindness speaks to you too. So be forgiving of yourselves on this learning journey. Fail forward and know that every lesson learned or every scar attained is because you've actually lived. And so I think that would be my advice to young women entering the profession. Look up, lean in. We are so excited to have women succeed and be excited about someone else that is exceeding with you. Take others on your journey.
Thank you so much, Jo, for sharing your time and your thoughts with us. I think one of the things that I will definitely take with me is the 4 C's for effective leadership. You said change, agility, empathetic curiosity, compliance, and courage. And I would even go ahead and add the other C that you just mentioned, which is having compassion for others. Are there any more points that you would like to add before we wrap up?
I love that you added the 5th C. And I think with compassion, we've got a handful. So you can hold these in your hand. And I would love to give anyone a hand up. I'm grateful for the people that gave me a hand up as opposed to a handout. And I appreciate the opportunity to share today. Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you once again. We look forward to hearing more from you at the Angaza Forum on the 16th and 17th of October in Nairobi.
Thank you, Patricia. See you soon.
See you too. Thank you.
For more information about the Angaza Forum, visit www.angazaforums.com. You can also interact with us on LinkedIn and X @AngazaForum.